Good morning, and welcome to Being the Change Now. Good morning, Ashwini.
Good morning, Bob.
This week's focus is to notice the still small voice, to just be aware of it. The assignment is not to act from it, figure out what it's saying, decode its message, or understand its instructions. The assignment is simply to be here, attentive, present, and receptive when intuition speaks. And here is our first caller. Wait, I think, there we go. First caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello. Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Bob. This is Christine in Oregon.
Hi, Christine. What are you noticing about this very small voice?
Finally back. I've been working early every day, so I can't get on the call all the time. But anyway, I'm so glad to have the opportunity to unmute myself, because conditioning for many, many, many days has just been controlling me, and I'm tired of it. I'm done with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm glad to be here. Thank you. I mean, it even brought tears to my eyes. I'm like, oh, finally, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to Sangha. I'm like, I'm getting free again. So,
Well, Christine, that it sounds like it's terrible, right? That when we feel identified and we feel controlled by our programming, and the relief of stepping out of that into the territory that mirrors our heart feels it feels so good. And just for you to say it that way, right? It's not like I have been having problems or I am responsible for the state of my existence, which is miserable. You just can say what's going on. Conditioning is controlling me, and I'm really glad to be within the sphere of Sangha. How much practice does it get to take? You know, we have to do it to say that. What is going on can be seen with such clarity, even if I can't step out of it.
Yeah, because I mean, I know it's there. It's just like running, and then the stories, and then like, okay, I'm not going to listen to those stories, and then again. But what I notice about intuition is, I went camping for two nights, and it's so relaxing. I finally stepped into being again. It's so wonderful. And the intuition to me feels like it's kind of like a feeling guidance in a way, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was camping and swimming, that's all, camping and swimming. And,
mm-hmm.
and I just went along, you know, like, it's time to get in. Okay. I walk over there and swim, and then it's time to do the next thing, and then I guess it's time to go. It was so nice to just go along.
Well, and I think you're describing the quality of being in the flow of life versus not being in the flow of life. Not because you aren't in the flow of life, but because attention is controlled by the programming. And so what you're describing is the qualitative difference between being in conditioned mind and being in life. So in life, just following that intelligence around, or the intelligence following you around, it's hard to say, right, Christine, because words make it dualistic. Because basically what you're experiencing is wholeness and oneness with existence. And that is what we feel we're carried by when we're in that place that you're talking about at the campsite. It's time to get out of the water. It's so relaxing. It's so nice. It's so easy. It's so effortless. It's so wonderful.
Yeah. Oh,
and it's so good. And I think part of what happens to us as practitioners is, as we get, you know, that's what we, that is our experience, and that's the experience we want. And sometimes in the, it's sort of like the, we can't make meaning out of this, but in the wisdom of life, in order for that to be your experience, not just when you're camping, but when whatever is going on that causes conditioning to step in, we have that opportunity to see it, not believe it, redirect our attention until whatever it is that you're doing that triggers you is also just like camping. Right? That facility, that ability, that being is available wherever you are. And so we just, you know, that's why we have tools. We have Sangha. We have a practice. We have a path. We have a process because we know that happens. And so there we go. I'm so relieved to be here in Sangha. I'm so grateful to be in touch with existence. And it's so important to do that, to take those 2 days to cultivate our relationship with life so that it becomes more and more available. If we don't do that, then, you know, our ability to have it atrophies. You have to practice it. You have to practice it. Practice not listening to ego and practice listening to life.
Yeah, and I noticed how easy it was to kind of just go back into that relaxed state. And I also want to say that a minute ago, ego said, you know, yeah, that's nice. You know, we go to town and go swimming. It's awesome. But, you know, work, you can't do that. But I just want to say, of course you can do that. I can do it. At work, I can be in the same state at work. Of course I can. I you know, it's just practice. It's just a little more challenging for some reason.
Exactly. Yes, and that lovely acceptance, right? Yes. I'm not going to believe what you're saying, conditioned mind, that you can only, relaxation and intuition is only available in the campsite. You can actually know what is true for you because you have practiced being here at work. And we can always be suspicious when ego says absolutely, right, or all the time, or never, or it's such an absolute abstraction program. And so, it takes more practice, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. And I have had that experience many times, and so I'm not going to believe you.
Yeah.
It doesn't get to define you, even if it controls you once in a while.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's the confidence that we get when we practice for a while, right? Yeah, conditioning comes back. It circles around. It's a worthy opponent. And it's not like I don't have the ability to face up to it, go through what it is requiring me to get to the other side.
Yeah.
And you know, Christine, I think that's the other thing you're pointing us to, which is that intuition is still guiding me in those difficult circumstances.
Yes, it is. And it's interesting, and that's an interesting place. I don't want to noodle it, but you know, it's an interesting place. Well, I think it has to do with I suffered enough. Okay, I'm done. I'm not going to go another day with this this control in my head. So
And sometimes that place of I'm still in well-being despite the suffering, right? We don't lose the thread to existence just because conditioning is throwing a tantrum.
Yep. No, it's there.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice to know it's there always?
Oh, it is. Boy, is it. Yes. Is it nice to know? Yeah.
Yay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you. Go happy.
You too.
Thanks, Christine. And Ashwini, here is our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jennifer from Whidbey Island, Washington.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey. I was just having a giggle here because I'm noticing the difference, such a stark difference between when conditioning tells me to do something versus when life just suggests it. And
yes, the very words, right? I'm told, or it's a suggestion.
Yes. And so, for instance, conditioning will say, oh my gosh, you need to put on some chapstick. Your lips are falling apart. Your entire body is falling. You know, and it just goes on and on, and it's just like cracking a whip, and it's like some kind of a task I need to do. And then life just says, time for chapstick. And I just put it on and go my merry way. Such a stark difference.
It is a stark difference. It's the qualitative difference. One is punishing and task-oriented and should, and the other is just simply, it's time. It's just soft, quiet, here, available, friendly.
Yes.
And you know, Jennifer, we can watch in our bodies how we respond, right? When someone says, would you help me with this? Or, you know, this might be some, you know, just that sort of receptive, concave. I mean, we can watch how what comes out of us in response is everything good in me. And as soon as that there's this like, I'm going to fold my arms and just bristle at having to react to that. I'm not going to. I don't want to. I hate it. Okay, I'm going to drag myself to do this because I come from fear of punishment.
Yes, yes. And I mean, it can have dramatic effects in the body.
Exactly. That punishing voice has such a negative effect on a dramatic, is the word you used, on the body. It's like if you're beaten all the time, of course you feel broken and brittle.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer. That discussion around chapstick, especially, it's to me, it really points out that there, you know, it's like how the content doesn't matter. It's just, you know, it's all about process, right? Where am I in that moment when I'm being led to put on the chapstick? Is like a gentle, like, oh, your lips are dry, let's put on chapstick, or why? What's wrong here?
Yes. Oh, it is. It is so dramatically different, and we get so used to it, right, Bob? I mean, we're so used to the taskmaster that we are surprised that it feels normal almost, until we start to open to that other still small voice and realize that we could actually live in a friendly universe rather than that unfriendly universe. And sometimes it's so surprising when we encounter the kindness, because we're so used to, so conditioned to the other thing.
Yeah, and to me, what that all points to is how important it is to be in the practice of turning the attention, you know, to just paying attention to that still small voice, because then we get to have those experiences over and over and over again, which start to become, you know, just something we know we can just choose, rather than, you know, well, does this work? Does this not work? And then just being stuck in the beating from conditioning.
Yeah, the importance of directing the attention.
Yep. All right, here is our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael from Chicago.
Michael.
Hi. I just wanted to say that what I'm really studying here is what exactly happens as soon as I have the thought, I can't hear my voice. Or I can't hear guidance. Because frequently I've had very, you know, I think we all have very clear feelings of something dropping in and just like, that's it. But it seems like almost the bigger the decision, I got a lot of work decisions around the pandemic and what we do, you know, together or online, and it involves people's, you know, health, and you know, so it seems like there's a lot at stake sometimes, and it's exactly those situations where frequently I feel I can't feel the right thing. I notice that as soon as I get that feeling, I start to do things that take me directly away from ever getting in touch with guidance.
So noticing the process where the still small voice feels unavailable. And it's your observation that the bigger the decision, the higher the stakes, the more the less access it is, and that feeling of I can't hear the guidance results in you doing things that take you further away, more deeply into conditioned doing, I would project.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. That's what I'm watching. And rather than, because I remember I got into wilderness training a lot, one of the first things I always say is, when you're lost, if you find you're lost in the woods, don't start running around. because you're likely to do things that are just going to get you more lost. And all of a sudden I feel like in my own mind I'm in exactly that situation where I'm watching how I just get myself more lost.
Well, and it's the watching as you're doing, right, Michael, that so first we just do, and then when we pay attention the way you are paying attention, you become aware of the process that is causing you to drift away from the guidance, right, where the place of guidance it is. And so it's in that watching that the answer will come, right? It's not in, okay, now that I know what I'm doing, here's what I have to do again, because that again takes you further away. And as you point to in the wilderness scenario, it's the slowing down that allows the access, not the ramping up. And everything that we're conditioned and programmed to do is pulling us, compelling us in exactly the opposite direction to the stillness.
Yes. Yeah, that's, thank you for that. Yeah, it's becoming more of a reflex to just slow down.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, at least I'm not going to get myself more lost if I slow down.
That's right. Well, and here's the spiritual place, Michael, at least for me, it drops in that lovely poem that we often quote in practice. When you're lost, the forest will find you. That's what the stillness brings, that when you get so, in other words, what the stillness allows for is the I to die. So that which animates us, in fact, I don't have to find the guidance. That's what I have to surrender. I have to let the guidance find me.
Ah, yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, that's right. I feel like there's like the doing is trying to find the guidance. And of course, I like the other quite a bit. And then even if it comes to a decision point, and I still don't feel like, boy, guidance has dropped in. Well, then I'm just going to make the best decision I can and then forgive myself somehow if later on it turns out to be deemed a mistake. Because what else am I going to do? I'm going to do my best.
Yes, exactly, with whatever that is available. And you know, Michael, this is that further place we had this recent discussion on open air about black holes. How do you know that a black hole exists? You can never know that because you can't see it, right? And so that place of making the decision from, oh, well, I didn't feel the guidance, and therefore I make this decision to surrender to the knowing that perhaps the guidance was not finding the guidance. We never know that, right? Because we're so tuned to being in the on pulse. When it's concrete, I know what it is. But when it's not concrete, does that mean that it's absent? It just means I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opportunity arises, right, that I make that choice from the place of the goodness that I am. I mean, at least you're doing that, right? Because most people...
Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. The intention is that. And I think with this practice, we realize that we don't have to forgive ourselves because all we have to do is not listen to a voice of self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
Because that presupposes that the decision was yours to make and you made the right decision and that you exist, rather than that place of living in the forest where the forest is going to make decisions all the time. You're just part of it. And maybe because you're not identified with the forest, you don't know the decision the forest is making.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of humility to accept that letting go of life unfolded in this way. And then I get to see what I get to see, but that doesn't mean that I made the wrong decision for which I need forgiveness necessarily.
Yeah, thank you for that. Because I realize part of the tension is a whole history of having listened so much in the past to ego. And then whenever I made a decision, especially earlier on in my life, instantly what would drop in, no matter what decision I made, is that's the wrong decision. That could be the wrong decision. And that kind of disciplining, that painful disciplining, still has its effects. But sitting still just allows that to slow off. So.
Yes, because we identify with something beyond us in that, right? When the forest finds me, there's trust. There's trust of the unfolding that egocentricity co-opts as being the author of existence. And so we can just let go of that. Okay, I clearly was not the revolving door through which this unfolding happened in this instance. So I don't have to take responsibility, but you certainly don't have to take blame for the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. I will practice with that.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Ashwin. Michelle.
Thanks, Michael. And Ashwin here is our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwin and Bob. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. So, what another fun week. One of the things I found myself doing earlier in the week that I don't tend to do is I asked life a question. I was identified. And the question that it occurred to me to ask was, I don't even remember the question exactly, but it was something like, how can I be in well-being with respect to health? And I just got this sense, I don't even know how to describe it, but, because there were no words, I just had a sense to breathe, follow the attention all the way from the bottom of the exhalation to the top of the inhalation. Just focus on the breath the whole way, in and out. And I asked another question, the same question with a different content, and I felt like I got the same answer.
I asked it again
with a third content, and by this time I was expecting that answer. But that's what I practiced. When I remember, I still practice it. But it's not like doing that particular thing has never occurred to me. But it was just I just found it so helpful. Because my experience of that practice is it's hard. It's so much harder for ego to get in there. For some reason it felt helpful. Just the specific, I don't know, you know, just somehow guidance to follow the breath all the way. Because even when I'm paying attention to the breath, there can still be a lot of room for ego to get in there. But it just somehow being with the breath all the way in, all the way out, just that real moment by moment attention. Anyway, it's such a huge help. So now I'm practicing again, remembering.
So a couple of things with that, Jeff, because to me, it's doing the assignment, right?
Mm.
The first thing that you practiced with is asking the still small voice a question. Because, the way we often hear the still small voice is, I'm going about, and there it is. But there is a very powerful process of turning the attention to the intelligence that animates and looking at it and asking for help. I mean, this is prayer, right? Prayer is defined as the silence in which you listen to God talk to you. And so there is a way by which you create the space and look to the intelligence that animates for an answer. And the answer is always there, especially because in that movement, I have surrendered. It's not up to me anymore. I'm not looking for the answer. It's the conversation we're having with Michael. Forrest finds me, right? And there's that complete receptivity, complete openness for whatever is going to come back, and something always comes back. And the beauty of what you did over and over and over again is to recognize that the answer is never a content answer. It didn't say, in order to be in well-being about your health, Jeff, you've got to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Yet the pointing to was always to be with life, with the breath, in a particularly specific way, which allows for the interrupt, which allows for perhaps a different way of breathing than you have, but paying attention to the inhalation and the exhalation in such an attentive way, such a whole way, that conditioning couldn't interrupt that. So your experience is of well-being because there was no room for conditioned mind to say, well, actually, you're feeling that sensation in your toe that's really, really painful, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was looking at even how to frame the question. Not, I don't mean in a mental way, but I just, I suspect even in how the question was framed was the still small voice. It is occurring to me in this conversation because I didn't say, you know, I've done this kind of thing, you know, what can I do? You know, what would be the next helpful thing to do?
Yes. Yes. Well, then yes. Oh, yes, absolutely, Jeff, because it's the specificity. It's a very, very important aspect of my practice because that's how you develop a relationship with life, right? You learn life vocabulary. You learn how to be in relationship to it. You learn to ask the questions. And, you know, the answers you get back actually train you on how to ask the question, because sometimes the answer doesn't come back in a way that you expect. Because then that's information of, well, you didn't ask me a specific enough question, right?
Wow, go ahead. No, please.
Well, it's just that dance with the life force animating us. It speaks to one differently in facilitation. It speaks to one differently in prayer. It speaks to one differently in meditation. It's got a vocabulary and a flavor. It's sometimes present. It's sometimes not. And so you just learn to be with it. And I would say, right, Devin, this is not to rain on your parade, but so three times this has been the answer. And so then you begin to expect it to be that. And that's great to watch out for.
Yeah, because, right.
Because you might do it and it might not work. And then you can watch all of what happens. But if life ever does that to us, it's just simply this friendly, okay, tweet on the nose to say, can you pay attention, Jeff? Don't rest in this has become something static. Life is always going. Mm-hmm. So you want to be in the dance. You don't want to be caught off guard. And that's what life always does. It trips us up for us to pay attention again.
Oh, I actually don't know what the third time when I asked the question and there came in the expectation, you know, I don't know what life would have said. Because I feel like it was blocked, it was clouded because the mind was there at that point. So anyway.
And to know that, right? To absolutely see that's what's blocking the first two experiences were presence. The next experience, the expectation was present. And so, oh well, I don't know. And then you drop it, and you become more attentive, more present, in order to let And then if you can, that's one thing. If you can, you let the forest find you. And so the dance of seeking and being sought.
Wow, this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Jeff. And that pretty much brings us to the end of the show, Ashwini. I just love that conversation. It just seems like such a rich place to practice with as we, you know, are listening for that still small voice. And then, you know, what happens next, right? Is something drop in? Do I notice expectation starts to arise? Am I trying to plan for what happens next? It's just all so fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It is absolutely fun. And it's fun. And I think something you said, right, Bobby, you never know. We absolutely never know. And so that all I can do is to pay attention. And then I'll see what is there to see, which could be something or not. And then you just move on to the next moment.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and then that place of knowing is such a great place to watch for, right? Like anytime I move to a place of I know, or you know, or I have this, something drops inside, I think, you know, conditioning is gonna, I mean, presence is gonna know or tell me something.
Yeah.
I know that I'm back in conditioning.
Yeah, it's just absolutely delightful.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, Ashwini, and we'll talk to more callers tomorrow. Go happy.
Thank you so much, Bob. Go happy. Thank you.